All right, Community Hospitalist Podcast listeners, welcome to our latest edition of the podcast. And today we have another of our special guests, Justine, one of the PA students from the esteemed DeSales program. And today we want to talk a little bit about preoperative cardiac risk assessment and a generalized approach to cardiac evaluation prior to surgery. So with that, I'll hand it off to Justine, who's reviewed an article from Circulation.
Okay, so the article that was reviewed from Circulation in July 2011, the article was written, is called Development and Validation of a Risk Calculator for Prediction of Cardiac Risk After Surgery, which basically assesses the cardiac risk preoperatively in order to optimize better care before surgery. Myocardial infarction and cardiac arrest are a significant cause of morbidity and mortality intraoperatively and postoperatively, and currently the relative cardiac risk index is the most commonly used tool, which does not discriminate between patients closely enough to assess their cardiac risk according to this study. So the point of this study was to develop and predict cardiac risk factors more precisely. The incidence of perioperative MI is 3-7% and is higher in those with coronary artery disease. And the incidence of coronary artery disease is rising in the aging population, and these are the people that are going into surgery. Therefore, it's important to identify their risk perioperatively to optimize them or prepare them better for surgery. The data that was used in this trial was from the National Surgical Quality Improvement Program, or the NSQIP, and it's the largest prospective clinical and surgical database. And this data was collected for the study and then compared to the RCRI. The data was collected in 2007 and 2008 from the NSQIP, and it included 183 hospitals in 2007 and 211 hospitals in 2008. Data was collected by a strict committee and trained surgical nurses, and patients were excluded if they were less than 16 years old, had a trauma, or underwent a transplant. Also, 21 surgeries were included in the study, and they were divided into categories. These are important because they are more specific than the RCRI categorizations of surgery. They include anorectal, aortic, bariatric, brain, chest, cardiac, ENT, foregut, gallbladder, appendix, and adrenal, hernia, intestinal, neck, OBGYN, orthopedic, abdominal, peripheral vascular, skin, spine, non-esophageal thoracic, vein surgery, and urologic. Also in this study, data was obtained on the following demographics for each patient, like age, sex, and race, lifestyle, such as smoking and alcohol use, and comorbidities, such as renal disease, CAD, MI. Also, the American Society of Anesthesiologists class is used in this trial, as well as the criteria for the outcome of this trial. And these classes are separated into pre-op functional status, dyspnea, BMI, pregnancy, transfusion greater than 4 units, chemoradiation, and emergency surgery. The outcomes of this trial were defined in primary and secondary endpoints. The primary endpoint was MI or cardiac arrest through 30 days postoperatively, and the secondary was an MI or cardiac arrest after aortic or vascular surgery. MI and cardiac arrest were defined as MI EKG changes, such as ST elevation greater than a millimeter in 2 continuous beats, new onset left bundle branch block, and acute wave that is new onset in 2 contiguous leads. Also, MI was defined as troponin elevation 3 times the normal level, and cardiac arrest is defined as no rhythm or a chaotic rhythm with loss of consciousness and use of life support at some point. The risk factors of all the patients were analyzed using the Fisher-Exact and Pearson X-squared test and only 5 variables were used because it was found during the study that greater than 5 variables didn't improve the predicted value of the outcome of the study. The study was done using the logistic regression scale, which was determined by discrimination and calibration. And discrimination is how well you distinguish between a case of MI and cardiac arrest versus a non-case of MI and cardiac arrest. And discrimination is used using the C statistic, which can range from 0.5 to 1.0, and 1.0 meaning that the predicted value is 100% accurate. And this represents a pair of different outcomes and calculations for the number of times a patient with an MI or cardiac arrest had a higher predicted risk than those who didn't develop an MI or cardiac arrest, and it represents the area under the curve, and the C statistic is what compared the RCRI and this logistical regression study. And calibration is the ability to generate the prediction, and calibration was performed using a medical analysis and the Hosmer-Leemshaw test, and it shows the observed versus the predicted MI cardiac arrest. The way the study was conducted was the model was validated and applied to the trained model from the 2007 database of patients from the NSQIP to estimate the MI and cardiac arrest probability for patients in the 2008 study. And then from that data, the predictive accuracy of the study was measured and then compared to the RCRI. The results of this study showed that demographically in the entire study, there was 1,371 patients, which represents 0.65% of the number of patients in the study that had an MI or cardiac arrest, and they were more likely to be older and male. Also, post-op patients with an MI or cardiac arrest were more likely to have complications and had longer operating times, and their length of stay in the hospital was longer, as well as they had an increased risk of death 30 days after surgery. The median number of days after surgery for an MI was 2 days. The median number of days to cardiac arrest was 4 days for all the patients. It was also found that preoperative variables increased the risk of MI and cardiac arrest in the final model. And the variables that are used in the study were finalized into 5 categories, and there are ASA class, dependent functional status, age, abnormal creatinine, and the type of surgery. It was found in the study that other variables were not statistically significant to the predicted value of cardiac events. Finally, the C-stat in this model, or C-statistic, which was used to compare the RCRI in this model, was 0.884. And for the RCRI, it was 0.75, and 0.75 only represents a moderate calibration, so it was shown that the new model was superior to the RCRI. In the new model, patients are given a score of 0, 1, or 2 for the absence, presence, or elevation of one of the variables. An example is a 60-year-old male with an ASA of 4. Functional status is independent, he has a normal creatinine, and he's undergoing aortic surgery, and his risk of prediction of cardiac risk after surgery is 3.18%. So once again, in the study, the variables that are used are age, functional status, ASA class, abnormal creatinine, and type of surgery. One difference from the RCRI is that the study does not take into account CHF and diabetes mellitus because it was found that they weren't significant to the predictive value. A difference also between the RCRI and the current study is that the RCRI only had 4,315 patients, and the study had 400,000 patients, making it more reliable towards the population. Also, in this study, surgeries were more specifically categorized. Instead of in the RCRI, they're more grouped together, such as a laparoscopic appendectomy and a pancreatectomy. characterized in the same category in the RCRI, but they're separated in this study into more of an organ-based classification. It was also shown that in studies, the discriminative ability should be greater than 0.8, and once again, the RCRI was only a 0.71, making it moderate C statistic. In conclusion, this study was shown to be helpful for surgical decision making and informed consent of patients. It uses the logic regression model, and instead of just placing patients into categories of high, intermediate, and low risk for surgery, this model gives each patient a numerical risk factor. There were some limitations on this study, such as the patients in the study were only from the NSQIP, and results like stress tests, echocardiograms, arrhythmias, and aortic valve disease were not available from certain patients, and outcomes were not looked at greater than 30 days.
What a nice review from Justine. Thank you, Justine. This is really a great review. So, well, let me kick it back to you, Justine. What did you think overall of the article after doing your review there? And maybe we can talk a little bit about how this article, how we would use this information. So,
I thought this article was a good way to summarize more clearly to patients and to help surgical teams and providers calculate an actual percent of the perioperative cardiac risk. I also thought that it was an improvement from the RCRI due to the fact that you can actually separate what type of surgery your patient would be going for, and this helps to better identify how big their risk is for surgery to have.
So I agree with Justine. So what I thought of, what I like about this, what they did in this model, was that they the way it's constructed takes more into account the specific surgery that the patient's getting, more than the revised cardiac risk index. The revised cardiac risk index has been used for a long time, so I also would like to send people back to an article in Annals 2010, which was a systematic review of revised cardiac risk index, where they pooled 24 studies, which included close to 800,000 patients. And the revised cardiac risk index, for those people who may have forgotten, include coronary disease, heart failure, cerebrovascular disease, diabetes, renal failure, and high-risk non-cardiac surgery. So the advantage to me of the revised cardiac risk index is the length of time that it's been used, and it's really kind of simple to use. And I do believe that the risk index proposed in Circulation is probably an improvement, but it really requires using the website that they refer you to calculate it, because otherwise I don't know how I would figure out what the risk was based on the model. So the website that they refer you to is, if you just basically go to Google and type in surgical risk calculator, which is what I do, it comes up. And then you plug in these numbers to an Excel sheet, and it gives you a risk. So I like the fact that it comes up with a number, and I like the fact that it's a little more specific in terms of the surgery. What both all these risk scores are estimates, and what sometimes they fail to do, as Justine pointed out, is take into account some specific patient factors that may not occur commonly enough to make it into a risk calculator, such as, for instance, critical aortic stenosis, which wasn't included in the risk calculator, would place someone at high risk for surgery. So I would caution that you can't just use the risk calculator in the absence of other evaluation. That was just sort of my overview of the risk calculator. So, Justine, you also looked up another article. Did you want to talk a little bit about your general approach? Justine, how does this article affect what you do, and what how would it change your approach? Discussion to get more of a specific percentage. I mean, ultimately, with all these risk calculators, things to patients either happen or they don't. While you can give somebody a risk, if they avoid the risk, great. If they don't avoid the risk, then it doesn't matter whether they were whether their re-procedural risk was low or high. So I'm not sure. I think this is a step forward, but I don't think it's a giant leap forward, because what would really be helpful would be to try to figure out exactly which strategies would be the best in order to mitigate or decrease risk, which I think is a little bit, we're still a little bit unsure of. So, I mean, for instance, how much would it affect me as a patient or the overall decision to say the risk of a MI or cardiac arrest was 3% as opposed to the patient's risk for surgery is moderate? How would that, I don't know how much that would affect the patient or the surgeon's decision to either proceed or not proceed with surgery. So that's my thought. But I, as you know, Justine, I am a fan of this calculator. Any other thoughts?
I agree with using the RCRI in conjunction with this. In order to better assess preoperatively the cardiac risk, but like you said, helping to mitigate the risk factors is really what would help the patient before surgery. So I think that this is good, and I think it will help patients be more informed prior to their surgery. And if it does get used, then we should also be trying to figure out how to decrease those risks as much as we can for surgery.
And the other thing, too, when I look at these risks, sometimes the rate of postoperative myocardial infarction depends on the screening process that's used. So if you're checking troponins after surgery, you're going to find more MIs than if you aren't. So, again, I think these risk scores are valuable, but I'm not sure, and I think to the extent that to the extent that it's more specific for the surgery, I like it, but I'm not sure how much different it is actually for the patient. So, I'm using it. So, I guess fine. So I am a yay on using the risk calculator. So I'm gonna make Justine tell us whether she would use this risk calculator or whether she favors using only the revised cardiac risk index.
I would say that I'm in favor of using the risk calculator because I've seen Dr. Melanchis use it, and I think it helps the patients that I've seen him use it with better understand their risk prior to surgery and also their postoperative risk.
Right, that's fair enough. I guess I would, if I were getting surgery, I'd plug myself into the calculator. How about you, Justine?
Yeah, I would too.
Okay. All right, community podcast listeners, thank you for another successful podcast. And we have to thank Justine for her participation today. And for those of you who've enjoyed listening to Justine, you can be assured that next week we'll have another podcast featuring Justine. So she'll be back. All right, community podcast listeners, take care.